Thank you to everyone for taking the time to join us today to discuss this important issue. To reiterate what the operator just told you, this call is on the record, and after you hear from participants, there will be a question and answer session. With that said, I'll go ahead and turn the call over to our MC today, Vice President of Tax and Domestic Economic Policy at the National Association of Manufacturers, Dorothy Coleman. Dorothy?
Thanks, Jamie, and thank you for everyone who's joining us today. We're focusing our attention on a letter that went up to Capitol Hill today that is quite unusual in that it unites a broad range of diverse groups, from manufacturers to railroads to farmers to charitable organizations to families to educators. Indeed, I think it's not an understatement to say that the letter represents the entire U.S. economy. The message of the letter is simple. The extenders, and for those who don't know, it's a group of temporary tax provisions that have expired or are set to expire soon, are a must-do for this lame duck session of Congress. The NAM and many other groups on the letter are strong proponents of tax reform, but until that happens, let's not dismantle the tax code. Moreover, not extending these provisions amounts to a tax increase on companies and individuals and other groups that use these provisions. And tax increases are the last thing we need in an economy that's not where it should be. The House and Senate have done good work on extenders. We call on them to work together and address the extenders as quickly as possible. This teleconference will highlight a few of these expiring provisions and the potential impact they have on businesses of all sizes, families, and nonprofits if the provisions are not extended. Here, our first speaker with us today is Carrie Calvert. She's Director of Tax and Commodity Policy at Feeding America. Feeding America is the nation's largest anti-hunger organization. Through a network of 202 food banks and 61,000 local agencies, Feeding America fed 37 million Americans in 2010 and leads efforts to reduce hunger in America. Carrie is a member of the public policy team in the D.C. office and leads the policy team's work on tax issues and nonprofit governance, including federal incentives for food and fund donations. Carrie?
Thank you, Dorothy, and thank you very much for inviting me to join today. As Dorothy said, I represent Feeding America, the nation's largest nonprofit hunger relief organization. And just a little update, in 2014, we released new data that shows we're feeding 47 million Americans right now. So the need is real, and this legislation would help us extend our reach in communities nationwide. Feeding America and millions of other nonprofits are counting on Congress to renew expired charitable giving incentives through tax extender legislation. These charitable giving provisions have a hugely important impact on communities nationwide by encouraging the donation of money, food, and also land for conservation. For the Feeding America Network, this legislation has resulted in over 100 million additional meals donated to communities nationwide since its inception, and we estimate that it would lead to an additional 150 million meals once renewed. For conservation, the impact is just as strong. It's resulted in over 2 million acres donated, and it's also resulted in hundreds of millions of dollars donated to nonprofits in every community nationwide. So we are certainly urging Congress to renew these very important incentives as soon as possible.
Thanks, Carrie. Our next speaker is Dr. Alan Barrett. He's president and CEO of Alert GPS. In that role, Dr. Barrett is responsible for all strategic and operational aspects of Alert GPS, the leader in smart locator products and services for businesses, families, and law enforcement. Before joining Alert GPS, Dr. Barrett was Senior Vice President and President of Global Communication Solutions at Avaya, with responsibility for the full life cycle of the company's intelligent communications products, and previously served as Senior Vice President of the Network Software and Systems Technology Group at Cisco. Dr. Barrett?
Thanks, Dorothy. Good morning, and thank you all for being here with us this morning. As Dorothy said, my name is Alan Barrett, and I'm the CEO and President at Alert GPS, and we're located in Scottsdale, Arizona. We're a technology startup with 12 employees that provide safety wearables for businesses and families. I've worked in the high-tech industry for over 30 years. I've been a senior executive at IBM, News Corp, Sun Microsystems, Cisco, and Avaya. Probably my most well-known role was as the first president of JavaSoft at Sun Microsystems. I'm also a serial entrepreneur and technology startup executive. I've been the CEO of 4 technology startups, and Alert GPS is my most recent and current startup. Finally, I've been a venture investor as a managing director at Warburg Pincus, and I'm an angel investor. In all my roles, I've been responsible for developing and selling innovative and valuable new technology products that have required significant R&D investments. At Alert GPS, we're a leading innovator in safety wearable technology for helping to keep people safe and connected anywhere in the world. We were the first company to engineer a safety wearable for kids. As part of our focus on child safety, we also develop and continue to fund and support the law enforcement alerting portal. This is the fastest and most efficient alerting technology for issuing Amber Alerts in the country. With this technology, we support the efforts of the Department of Justice, the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, and law enforcement in the issuance of Amber Alerts nationwide, and we do it entirely free of charge. Our commercial solutions are available as small wearables and mobile apps. Children and parents use our solution daily, and we've recently begun deploying our solutions for use by employees in the work environment, including for teachers in schools. Our solutions offer the quickest way to communicate and locate a person needing immediate assistance. When seconds matter most in an emergency situation, a simple push of a button on our wearable is all it takes to reach out to someone or a group of people for help and assistance. This has been made possible through our R&D innovation and investments. In fact, each company I've worked for has relied on R&D for innovation. That's what makes the R&D tax credit so important, especially early in the life of a company when you're creating the innovation that will ultimately define the company. There's a really important opportunity this year to support startups with the R&D credit. The tax extenders package has an improvement of the R&D credit specifically for startups. Because startups often have no revenue, or at least no profits and no income tax liability, startups obtain no current benefit from the R&D credit. Startup companies can only carry unused R&D credits forward to the day they become profitable. But one of the proposals in the tax extenders package is to modify the credit so startups can realize a current benefit by allowing them to take the credit against their payroll tax liability. This would provide a significant tax benefit at a crucial stage in a young company's development and would help them move more quickly to the time when they can earn profits which could be reinvested in the company. For example, at my small company, this tax credit alone would allow us to hire another engineer. At a colleague's company larger than mine, it would enable him to hire 3 more engineers. I emphasize that it is critical for Congress to act this year and extend the R&D credit seamlessly on a multi-year basis. As you know, the R&D credit expired at the end of last year. It's the primary method by which the U.S. government supports private sector R&D. The United States was once the leader in R&D support, but now many countries have more generous incentives. Now we face a very problematic situation where the R&D credit has expired at the end of 2013, and so far, Congress has not acted to extend it, even for 2014. So it's essential for Congress to act quickly and pass a seamless multi-year extension of the credit. Not doing this will send the message that the U.S. no longer makes it a priority to encourage innovation. That's not a message we want to send. So I urge Congress to move quickly and pass the tax extenders in a lame duck fashion.
Thank you, Alan. Our next speaker is Drew Greenblatt. He's the president and owner of Marlin Steel Wire Products in Baltimore, Maryland. Drew bought Marlin Steel in 1998 when it was a small maker of a commodity product. Since then, he has grown revenue sixfold. Today, Marlin Steel imports nothing and exports baskets and sheet metal fabrications to 36 countries, including China, Australia, and Japan. Worker safety is critical. Drew?
Thank you. It's critical for us to grow middle-class American manufacturing jobs. They're great jobs. They pay on average $77,000 a year. The only way that works is if our team has the best tools at their disposal, the best technology, the best equipment. And the way we buy this equipment, the way we buy this technology so our team could have the best tools is if we have accelerated depreciation and bonus depreciation. That's critical to our success. We're competing every day with China and in Mexico. The only way our team could have the productivity to meet that those formidable economic rivals is by having the best equipment. Right now, we're in the process of expanding our factory floor space 53% and adding over 600% more power. That's a huge copper wire coming into our factory. This is a big sign of optimism. It's critical that we have comfort that accelerated depreciation and bonus depreciation is going to happen so that we stick our neck out and buy more equipment, because we're going to man that equipment with very well-paid people. They're going to make great parts that we're going to ship all over the world. In addition, the R&D tax credit's also critical for us. 20% of our employees are degreed mechanical engineers. That innovation, that's our secret sauce. And if we don't have comfort that our engineers are going to be, and their hard work and their clever ideas are going to be protected under the R&D tax credit, it makes them less likely that we can engage more of them in the future. We want to hire more engineers in the future, and it's going to be minimized if we don't have this kind of tax certainty. The bottom line is, we don't want American companies to be sitting on the sidelines now. We want American companies acting now to buy more equipment, hiring more talent, ending the high levels of unemployment. When we think about hiring talent, we think in 30-year mindsets, 20-year mindsets. We need the confidence to know that our tax policy matches our optimism. We need the government to end gridlock and get these enacted immediately.
Thank you, Drew. Our next speaker is Matt Terkstra. Matt's Manager of Legislative Affairs at the National Federation of Independent Business, where he oversees many of NFIB's advocacy efforts in the House of Representatives. Before joining the NFIB, Matt served as a Legislative Director for Representative Nan Hayworth from New York, Senior Legislative Assistant for Representative Scott Garrett from New Jersey, and the Senior Committee Clerk at the House Committee on Ways and Means. Matt?
Thank you, Dorothy. And I just wanted to echo Drew's comments earlier here and to kind of give a more national perspective as well. The story that Drew outlined is one that we're hearing at NFIB on a daily basis. Small business owners across America are calling in. They're asking us repeatedly, when is the Section 179 expensing for small businesses going to be extended? They're talking to their accountants, they're evaluating their end-of-year purchasing decisions, and they're trying to decide what to do with their money. And right now, a lot of them would like to invest. They'd like to reinvest in their business. And with this uncertainty right now, we can't really it's freezing out investment. So, for example, one member I spoke with owns a machine shop and wants to buy a new special lathe and some fabrication equipment. And until we have some kind of certainty about what's going to happen with this, he is not making that investment. So what does small business expensing mean? It means increased investment, improved cash flow, reduced paperwork, support for the local economy, and support for jobs nationwide. We hope that Congress can come to an agreement about extending small business expensing permanently, but we would like to see action on expensing done in the lame duck nevertheless. Early this year, the House passed H.R. 4457. It was passed with 272 votes, including 53 Democrats. It has been widely supported by both Republicans and Democrats. There's a long history of that support dating back all the way to 2000. So we hope that the House and the Senate can come to some agreement about that and hopefully extend it permanently. Again, action is crucial right now. The other provision I'd like to highlight is the deduction for state and local sales taxes. This provision provides fairness and equity for residents in states that do not collect income taxes and levy a higher state sales tax as a result. These states are Alaska, Florida, Nevada, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington State, and Wyoming. For residents in these states, it's an issue of fairness for them. In all the other states, residents are allowed to deduct their state income taxes. We want to make sure that the residents in these states have a level playing field between the two types of tax systems. 75% of small business owners are pass-through businesses, and this is an important deduction for small business owners in these states. It's been extended seamlessly since 2004. And for individuals residing in these states, failure to extend this provision will result in a surprising tax increase, as many people are unaware that this provision has already expired. So we strongly hope that Congress can come to an agreement, take action on this legislation right now. The sooner the better. It'll need increased investment, increased jobs, and improving in an improving economy. So thank you very much, Dorothy, and back to you.
Thank you, Matt. Our last speaker is Mike Freemail. He's the managing member of Freemail Family Farms. Freemail Farms is a multi-generational farming operation. Mike and his wife, Stephanie, their two oldest sons, Brett and Miles, and their nephew, Trevor, are all part of the family business. Freemail Family Farms produces corn, cotton, wheat, and milo on approximately 15,000 acres in the panhandle of Texas. The majority of these crops are irrigated. Their operation is in Groom, Texas, located slightly east of Amarillo, Texas. Mike?
Good morning, and thank you, Dorothy. I'm here today to talk about one of the expired tax provisions that matter most to my business and to farmers and rural communities across the country, Section 179, expensing. Decisions to invest and grow my business are made in part on how quickly the cost of new equipment can be recovered through expensing. This frees up cash for new investments. Section 179 expensing was put in place by Congress many years ago to encourage farmers and small business to do just that, to recover a significant portion of our capital costs in the year that the investments are made. That stimulates new economic activity. Congress allowed the higher Section 179 expensing levels to expire at the end of 2013. Almost 1 year later, we still don't know whether they will be extended into 2015 or applied retroactively for 2014. Certainty and stability of the tax consequences of our business decisions is essential. We are reluctant to invest capital in new equipment, buildings, and facilities without knowing how the new assets will be treated for tax purposes. We don't want to tie up cash unnecessarily when it's needed elsewhere in the business. These tax provisions have significant impact on the broader community. The more cash flow a producer can free up in his operation, the more we can invest back into new equipment, inputs, and services. That benefits the entire community, suppliers, service providers, equipment dealers, and manufacturers, essential to running a business. Multiply that by tens of thousands of farmers and small businesses across rural America, and you have a real economic growth engine. I know a number of my neighbors have put investments on hold because they have not been able to count on these incentives. Their availability for the 2015 tax year is highly uncertain. Section 179 needs to be reinstated as soon as possible. We need some certainty that will be in place going forward. Congress should act immediately to help get the ag economy and rural communities moving once again. Thank you.
Well, thanks, Mike, and all our speakers. And now we'd like to open up the call to questions from the press. Jamie?
All right, we're ready to take questions, operator.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. And please record your name clearly when prompted. Your name is required to introduce your question. And to withdraw your request, you may press star 2. One moment, please, for the first question. The first question is going to be from Mr. Kent Hoover's line from American City Business Journal. Sir, your line is open. You may proceed.
Yes, I guess my main question is, where do things stand right now with it? When will the extenders be taken up? Will they be taken up? And does the showdown over immigration, does that further cloud the picture for the extenders? Are you worried about that?
Kent, this is Dorothy. Thank you for your question. I think our focus right now is on the letter and how important these expiring and expired provisions are to the U.S. economy. Clearly, we're not in a position to dictate when, you know, we're pushing for them action before the end of the year as soon as possible. It would be even better, but we're not in a position to comment any further than that.
The next question we have on the line is going to be from Mr. Joseph Lawler from Washington Examiner. Sir, your line is open. You may proceed.
Hi, thank you. Could you just please talk about are the politics of getting these extenders renewed more difficult or more complicated than they have been in the past when they've been re-upped? Thank you.
Thank you. This is Dorothy again. I think this is always a challenge to get these done. We have been successful in the past. And again, our focus right now is on urging Congress to act, not telling them how to do it, but really more to push them to action. I mean, these clearly, I think you probably got, hopefully got the impression or from the entire phone call, these provisions impact a wide swath of the U.S. economy. And if they're not acted on, they're going to result in tax increases on a wide swath of the economy. And I don't think that's what we need. I know that's not what we need at this point. So our focus is on urging Congress to get this done as quickly as possible.
Thank you. The next question we have on queue is from Mr. Spencer Chase from AgriPulse. Sir, your line is open. You may proceed.
Oh, yeah, thanks for taking my question. I actually have two things I'm kind of wondering if somebody could address. First one being, I was just wondering if somebody could maybe speak to the importance of getting these extenders done in the lame duck as opposed to retroactively, and if your groups have any opinion on when these things get taken care of. And the second thought, I'm just wondering if you guys are hearing any opposition to these tax extenders, be it on Capitol Hill or otherwise.
Again, we think that these should be done as soon as possible. And actually there is, and we think that they need to be done before the end of the year. Pushing this into next year does create a whole host of problems. I think certainly the IRS has been pretty upfront in talking about the administrative burden, but beyond that, it affects financial reporting. Charitable organizations lose the critical December holiday season. Individuals in non-income tax states, the group that Matt was talking about, lose their ability to deduct their state sales tax from federal taxes. Moreover, when the new Congress convenes in January, we think they should be focused on tax reform, not fixing a problem that's left over from a previous year.
This is Carrie Calvert with Feeding America. I just wanted to chime in and say that, you know, especially when we're talking about tax incentives that encourage the donation of excess nutritious food to people in need, retroactivity doesn't really help that much when you have nutritious food that's really gone bad and not been able to be captured and donated. So it really does have a big impact on the ability of lots of small businesses, farmers, restaurants, retailers, to capture that food and donate it.
Drew?
Now's the time when people – this is Drew Greenblatt from Marlin Steel. Now's the time when all factories – there's 223,000 of us in America – are sitting down and creating and preparing our budget for next year. So right now we're deciding how much we're going to spend in new equipment, new technology, new software, et cetera, for the next year or two. And if we have lack of clarity, people are going to say, you know what, I'm not going to pursue it. I'm not going to buy it. What does that mean? That means they're going to hire less 80,000 people to run that fancy equipment. They're going to hire less engineers, because they don't have an understanding of what the future holds. We need Washington to work now, because we will then budget into this year and next year optimistic growth and big investments, and then we'll hire more people to man those machines. Washington has to get with it, because we're in a challenging time right now. We're competing against China. We're competing against Mexico. This is not a theoretical topic. This has to be done immediately so that we build these into our budgets and we start acting on it and we start buying equipment now.
Thanks, Drew. Mike?
Yes, this is Mike Framel. For myself, the way this pertains to me, we had to make some large investments in equipment this year. So, you know, I need for it to be made retroactive back 2014, because, you know, if I don't have that done, I will not be making any more investments in next year. And I know a lot of my neighbors and so forth have not made purchases, and they will not be making purchases. But I have already had to make some large investments for my operation. So we need Congress to act as quickly as possible. We need this done this year, and plus we're in the tax planning year, deciding what we're going to do for next year, buying more equipment and so forth, and we need something to be done as soon as possible. We need it done this year.
Excellent.
Just to echo this, again, this is the message that we're hearing from small businesses nationwide, is that this is the time of year when people are making their decisions about purchasing new equipment, they're meeting with their accountants, and if we wait until January, that's potentially a year's worth of investment that could be lost. So we need to definitely get this done in December. Doing it retroactively would create a whole host of problems, as Dorothy referred to earlier. And we strongly urge Congress to work out a deal and make sure that this gets done before the end of the year.
Thank you. Once again, to ask a question, you may press star and then one, and please record your name when prompted. To withdraw your request, you may press star two. The next question we have is going to be from Mr. Tom Ryder's line from radio station WMAX. Sir, your line is open. You may proceed.
Thank you very much. My question is, what is the biggest challenge to getting this thing passed during the lame duck session?
Again, I think our focus is not on telling Congress how to do it, but asking them and strongly urging them to get it done. You know, a lot of these things are outside of our control. I think if we had our druthers, this would have been done last year at this time, removing a lot of the uncertainty of this year. I think, you know, just pragmatically, though, we've got only a few weeks left in the legislative session, and there, you know, there's a pretty robust agenda. We think that the extenders are a very important item, and again, we're very hopeful that they'll get them done before, as quickly as possible. Anyone want to add to?
Thank you. The next question comes from Ellen Ferguson of Congressional Quarterly. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask Mike if he could detail what these investments were. You mentioned that you've made some hefty investments this year and you need the depreciation or the expensing to be retroactive.
I had to replace four of my tractors that were just, the technology is outdated, fuel efficiency, and we just have to keep our equipment updated. So I chose to go ahead and make the investment in this year. But I bought six tractors.
Wow.
That's what we did.
How large is your operation?
15,000 acres.
15,000. Okay. Thank you. That's it.
Thank you. The next question we have is from Jackie Satka from Feedstuff. Your line is open. You may proceed.
Good morning. Can you maybe, you talked about how this letter was signed by nearly groups that represented the whole economy. Can you talk a little bit about who was represented, and is this the first time that you guys have all come together, or had you worked together last year? Obviously, we did not see anything at the end of 2013. And, you know, do you see some different dynamics or more people that have seen the impact of it since we did not have it in effect in 2013?
Well, thank you. I think the letter, and we can share a copy of it with you, has over 525 organizations representing a lot of companies and individuals. And as I said before, they range from manufacturing groups to railroads to transportation to technology groups to financial service groups to a lot of chamber of commerce, restaurant associations, a very varied and broad swath of the U.S. economy. We have worked these issues before together, and I think this is probably the largest support we have ever gotten in our efforts, and as broad-based as we have. And I think more and more these provisions, I think it indicates that these provisions are very important to these groups and that they do make a difference in their decisions on expansion, on hiring, and even on their personal family financial decisions. So I think it really, if anything, the effort this year is larger and more broad-based than before, and it really highlights the critical importance of these provisions.
Great. Well, thank you so much. That looks like the last question here, so we'll go ahead and end the call. I just wanted to thank everyone again for taking the time today to be with us. And if folks on the call want to get more information about this effort, they can visit www.nam.org/gridlock or growth. And with that, operator, you can go ahead and end the call. Thank you.